How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days. Jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. Especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza.
Hello and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today it's me, your boy Jay King from MassLive.com. I'm going to be joined by the Ringer's Kevin O'Connor, one of the greatest draft experts who ever lived, a guy who has just skyrocketed to internet stardom for going from some Celtics blogs, including the Great Celtics blog, to now The Ringer, where he covers the NBA and does a great job. I've really enjoyed his rise, really enjoyed watching his quick rocket ship to the top. So Kevin and I had a nice little conversation. You'll be able to hear that shortly. Before you do, please subscribe to the podcast. Search for Locked On Celtics wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, wherever else. Just search for it, subscribe to us, give us a 5-star rating. It's really easy to do, and it helps us. We're giving you the daily podcast Monday through Friday, the only daily Celtics podcast. So please do that. We'd appreciate it. And now, without further ado, on to the interview with The Ringer's Kevin O'Connor. All right, so we're here with The Ringer's Kevin O'Connor, one of the writers I really respect. I've been following his stuff since he wrote for Celtics blog. He used to be writing all about the Celtics. Now he's covering the whole NBA for The Ringer. Really doing a great job. Kevin, I've really appreciated your work. I think I've always liked your work, but I think you've done even a better job since moving to The Ringer. So congratulations on the move, first of all, and congratulations on continuing to work on your craft and doing a great job. Everybody go follow Kevin O'Connor on Twitter. What is it? At Kevin O'Connor NBA?
Yes, sir.
I thought that was it. You're on all my lists and stuff, but I always forget people's actual, like, I see them by, like, the little Twitter picture.
when people change their picture, it's like a totally new person you're following.
Exactly. It's like, who the hell is that? So just so everyone knows out there, I am fighting through illness today. If my voice sounds a little different, that's why. If I start coughing, that's why. I'm a podcast warrior. Just, I cannot be deterred. So
Jay's work, I think, is off the charts.
So Kevin is, in addition to his stuff about the NBA, is also a draft expert. He's done a draft guide every year, which is fantastic. Probably the most in-depth scouting reports you can get. And he's sold it in the past. I don't know if he's going to continue. Are you going to continue selling it?
To be determined. I hope so. We'll see.
Cool. So he writes these draft guides. He knows the draft prospects as well as anybody, maybe better than anybody. And so we're going to pick his brain. The Brooklyn Nets right now are on an 11-game losing skid. They haven't won in like three decades. They are four four wins back up, whatever, in the lottery standings. So they look like they are going to finish with the NBA's worst record this season. The Celtics obviously will benefit from that. They will have probably a top four pick automatically if the Nets, well, they will have a top four pick automatically if the Nets finish in their current place. And this draft looking pretty good. Kevin, so first of all, I had Sam Vecenie on the podcast earlier, maybe like a couple months ago, and I asked him the same question. What are your overall thoughts on this draft and how it's shaping up? Like, how are the lottery prospects in this draft compared to a normal draft?
I think it's really, really strong up top, Jay. I look at this draft and, you know, from a Celtics perspective, even if they don't end up with the number one pick, if they end up like it with the fifth pick, right, or even the sixth pick, I think you're going to get a prospect at that spot who you – an individual team might view as the top guy. So like at the top, you have a collection of point guards, Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, Dennis Smith. Those three guys, one team may prefer one over the other. Same thing with the forwards, Josh Jackson, Jason Tatum, Jonathan Isaac. Those guys may be viewed as the top guy at their position by individual teams. And it remains to be seen who the Celtics view, but they'll have their choice of a guy, whether they have the number one pick or five or six.
Do you think all those guys are potential all-stars?
I think the potential is there. I don't necessarily view Dennis Smith as highly as a lot of people, but I think the potential is absolutely there for all those aforementioned guys to become all-stars.
So why do you hate Dennis Smith?
I don't think he has good basketball IQ. I don't love his feel for the game, and he doesn't defend. He's 6'3". He has stubby arms. I question his ability to defend his position, which isn't a problem if you become a 28-point-per-game scorer like Isaiah Thomas. But it is a problem if you don't become that go-to guy, and I question his ability to really become that level of a player, even though the potential is there for it. I much prefer Markelle Fultz and Lonzo Ball out of that group of guards that a lot of people have up top.
Okay, so a lot of people I've talked to have said that Markelle Fultz is the guy in this year's draft. And that's not Celtics people, just for the listeners. I don't want anybody to listen to this and be like, the Celtics are picking Markelle Fultz number one. But what separates him, assuming you put him number one, and you've already said you think he and Lonzo Ball are better prospects than Smith, what separates Fultz from those other guys?
I think with Fultz and with Ball, really, it's just the feel for the game. Fultz is only 18 years old right now. I think he'll be 19 at the time of the draft, and just his ability just to play at different space and control tempo, and really, I think, in a sense, just control the overall game, especially in the pick and roll, is really rare for a player his age. He can score from each level of the floor. Granted, it's a small sample size. He looks like he's a much improved three-point shooter than he was at the high school level, and he was good then too. So he has the ability to score from all levels. He knows how to control his body and control tempo. He can finish creatively at the rim. And he's a really, really good passer, and he's long, so he has the ability to become a really good defender. I look at Fultz, and I don't see a weakness that makes me think, okay, this could hold him back from becoming a really, really good player for a really long time.
Now, can he play the two? Because obviously, you know, the Celtics, if they do get that top draft pick, they have Isaiah Thomas, who has become, like, absolute lightning offensively, just buckets after buckets after buckets, smart plays after smart plays, huge fourth quarters after huge fourth quarters, and he's 5'9". And if they pick one of these point guards, you know, obviously Isaiah Thomas can play off the ball, but like if you keep Isaiah Thomas, assuming you keep Isaiah Thomas, and I think he's forcing himself into their long-term plans regardless. Like he has just been absolutely dynamite over the last month, then you're going to need to have someone who can coexist with him. Can Fultz do that?
I think they can coexist. I think, and the big reason why is because, first of all, Isaiah Thomas is a great shooter off the catch, so he can space the floor for you. He's not one of those point guards who needs to have the ball in his hands to be effective. And Markelle Fultz is exactly the same way. He's a better shooter off the catch at this stage of his career. And I think, in a sense, you'd be looking more at, do you have to move Avery Bradley, or do you have to move Marcus Smart if you do acquire Fultz? Because I think Fultz has just much higher potential than Bradley and Smart. Granted, both of those guys are really, really good. I think one of them would have to move more so than worrying about how he would coexist with Isaiah Thomas, because I think those two would fit great. And they both went to Washington, so they share their college school.
But then if you move Bradley, you send away a guy who grew up in Tacoma like Isaiah Thomas.
maybe that's the argument for moving Smart, just to keep all the Washington guys.
These are discussions the Celtics will have to have in the war room for sure. All right, let's move on to – okay. So if the Celtics do get number one pick, how many of these point guards – are good enough that you have Isaiah Thomas, you have Avery Bradley, you have Marcus Smart, but you'd rather have one of these point guards than one of the wings or somebody else?
Oh, man, that's the tough question. It's really hard because, so here's the thing with the forwards, right? So Josh Jackson from Kansas, he's like one of the best defensive forwards you'll see at the college level, like ever. Like, he is awesome, and he does so many things well. Yeah, he's really good. He's and he can handle the ball too a little bit as a forward.
I love his passing. His passing's great.
Really fun. But the thing is he's not a good jump shooter at all. And over the past few years, we've seen forwards, guys like Justice Winslow, who the Celtics loved. And obviously we know that they reportedly tried to trade up for him. But with Winslow, even as good as he's been in the NBA, without the jumper, that hurts him a lot, right? It really limits him in the half court. So Josh Jackson could see the same problems no matter how good he becomes in every other category. And with Jonathan Isaac, I like him quite a lot, but at the same time, he's kind of had moments where he's really struggled defensively. He's really lean frame. I think he's somebody who may be more talented long term, but because he needs to add so much weight and develop so much of his raw talent, you'll be waiting longer for that to come. And then Jason Tatum. I had him at number two before the season, and I still have him like top three, top four, but he's had issues finishing at the rim because he's not like the bounciest athlete, and his outside jumper is not great. It's good, not great though. So those guys, they're all really, really good forwards, but I don't see them quite on the same level as Markelle Fultz and to an extent Lonzo Ball either. So it's a really a tough philosophical question for the Celtics, because you don't want to draft by need if you have the number one pick. You definitely don't want to do that. But at the same time, if you did add a point guard, you are really adding more to the pile when you already have talent. Like even back at the bench, like Terry Rozier and Demetrius Jackson, like you have talent at the back end of the bench. Not that they'd influence your decision making, but you'd really be stacking up at that position.
Yeah, and then if you take a wing, it's like, well, we have Jay Crowder and Jaylen Brown. Yeah. And obviously, Brown will get better and better in year two and beyond. But I do think that the roster would need a wing more so than a point guard. But it seems like these point guards are just on another level, whether it's Ball, Fultz, everybody else. Lonzo Ball, he came into college and he was kind of like low lottery expected. Obviously, besides set the world on fire in college, what has he done to push himself up? Like what has he changed about his game since high school that has allowed him to shoot up the lottery in these projections?
I don't know if it's as much that he changed as much as like everything that he was good at, he's become even better and better at. And in some ways, I think my expectations of him on the defensive end were a little bit lower than what I've seen. Like his instincts aren't just elite on the offensive end. Like he's really quick on the defensive end too. And with his size, at 6'4", 6'5", he has good size for the position. Granted, he's a little lean. He's not, I don't think he's as thick as Markelle Fultz, which might, I don't want to say it'll hurt him, but I think Fultz has higher potential on the defensive end. But Lonzo Ball, just the dude, has the greatest passing vision. Like, I think I've watched, seen in a long time from a point guard at the college level. The guy sees things that you don't even see when you have like the ideal viewing angle watching on TV. It's really amazing watching him pass the ball.
It's funny because I watch college as a fan. Like I watch the NBA, and it's sort of like I view it more as a job now, and I try to be totally unbiased. I watch college as a fan, and so I loved Lonzo Ball at first. I was a huge Lonzo Ball fan because I love how he sprays the ball ahead. Like he doesn't care whether it's him getting an assist. Like, he is pushing it up the floor. He is making the right pass regardless. And I love that about him. And then my brother pointed out, he's like, the Lonzo Ball hype is too much. It's way too much. I don't like this guy anymore. So I started hearing the Jason Kidd comps, and I was like, man, I started going the other way on Lonzo Ball. But now the hype train has slowed down a little bit, and I'm back high on Lonzo Ball. So I've like ridden the Lonzo Ball roller coaster this year. I'm not sure whether he's strong. Is he strong enough to do all the same things at the NBA level? Like, how much strength is he going to have to put on to get into the paint? When I see him, his biggest issue to me is breaking guys down off the dribble in the half court and getting into the paint.
Yeah, I think he'll be strong enough. In some ways, I think, to your point about him breaking guys down, is I wonder if at the NBA level, will his jumper off the dribble be good enough where guys have to respect that? Because Lonzo Ball has no issues at all shooting with his funky, unorthodox shooting form when it's off the catch and he has space.
It's so gross.
It's really gross. It's the worst looking good jump shot like you'll ever see.
But it's almost like gross in an entertaining way. Like, you watch it and you're not like disgusted, you're kind of amused.
Yeah, exactly. It's just this weird sidewinding motion. If like you're listening and you haven't seen Lonzo Ball shoot a jumper, make sure you go on YouTube after you listen and just watch him shoot jumpers, because it's really weird.
But bring a pot just in case you need to vomit.
Yeah. But the thing is, though, is that translates for him off the catch, but it doesn't necessarily translate off the dribble, and that's big for a guy that might have the potential to become like a scoring guard that can also pass at the highest of levels. So will defenses have to respect that jumper off the dribble? I don't know. I have my concerns about that, and that's where I kind of have Fultz ahead of him, because I just see Fultz as a more dynamic scorer with great passing ability, whereas with Ball, I'm not totally confident that the jumper will translate off the dribble unless he tweaks his mechanics. But tweaking mechanics is just an unknown variable that it's so hard to predict what a player will do or won't do.
Where do you put the two Kentucky guards? Like, De'Aaron Fox, to me, he's one of those, like, he can just get wherever he wants on the court. He is electric. Malik Monk obviously has just been scoring the ball. I love watching that guy fill up the basket. Where do those guys, are they like a tier below the other guards in your eyes, or up there with them? How close are they?
They're both a tier below for me, and I think for the other guys at the Ringer. On our draft board, I'm pretty sure we had them at 11 and 12, something along those lines.
So maybe even a couple tiers below.
Yeah, maybe that's even a little too low, but it's just there's so much talent kind of in front of them. But for Fox, he does everything. He's so fast. He can get anywhere he wants to with the ball. And he's a really good passer, too. The thing is with him, is he's not a good jump shooter. And I wonder if he becomes like a better version of Elfrid Payton or something like that. Because I really liked Elfrid Payton in his draft
Elfrid
class.
He's killing it. He's been exploding a little lately.
I know. He's averaging like 20 points per game this month or something like that.
It's been weird.
He's killing it. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, that's why I loved Elfrid Payton in his draft, right? Because I was like, oh, if this guy just improves into like an above average 3-point shooter or even just an above average shooter period, he's going to be a really, really good player. And we're seeing the flashes of that now. And it's the same thing with Fox. If he just improves into an average shooter, that's all he needs to be. He doesn't need to be a great shooter. So I have him a little bit ahead of Monk for that reason, just because he's so good defensively and he can pass, whereas Monk is just kind of the scorer.
I want to ask you this because you do so much scouting and you do so much evaluating. Is shooting for you the toughest skill to evaluate how good people will be? Because obviously with stretch fours, with stretch fives, with some of these point guards who come into college and they've always been able to get to the rim, or like they have 40% shooting in small sample size, how tough is it to project how good these guys will be as shooters and whether they will ever be able to develop that skill?
I think it's a tough skill to evaluate, but at the same time, with some guys, I think it's like easy, but other guys, it's such a variable. And so like to tie this to the Celtics with Marcus Smart, for example, he's still the same like 30% 3-point shooter today that he was in college, just like he was in high school. But his mechanics have been tweaked a little bit over the years, like you would have wanted to see, but it hasn't changed the success rate. So with him, it's like he's made changes, but is it enough changes, or is that just who he is? Like there's so many variables that are hard to even predict. Like with Ben Simmons with the Sixers, I wrote an article last year about how my theory is that he's shooting with the wrong hand. Maybe I'm right. Maybe my tinfoil hat theory is correct and he is shooting with the wrong hand.
What if he comes back lefty now that he's taken like 6-7 months off?
Yeah, like the thing is like what if he becomes an average shooter shooting with his left hand now? It's like I think there's just so many variables that are hard to account for, and that's the tough thing I have with Josh Jackson, is because he's so good at everything, and if he becomes a good shooter, he's going to be a really, really good player and have a long NBA career. But if he doesn't, maybe he'll have a long career, but I don't know if he's necessarily the guy you'd want to have on your modern team when 3-point shooting and spacing is so important.
Yeah, by the way, I meant coming back as a righty. I know that he's a lefty, Ben Simmons. The Sixers are good now.
They're awesome. They're so fun.
It's so weird. Like all of a sudden they're just good. They're winning games. The process is real.
It's so fun, Jay. Joel Embiid is like just the best player in the world. One of my favorite people right now. It's so fun watching the Sixers.
You were, even when Embiid was gone for 2 years, you were like this big Embiid guy. You had Embiid's back. Everybody else was like, yeah, but the injury concerns, and he's never played a game, and he only played like 15 games or whatever in college. And you were like, this guy has more potential than anyone. So are you taking a little victory lap right now, man?
I don't know if I'm taking a victory lap, but I'm like, I'm celebrating quite a lot in the inside just because it feels so good to see, because this is like, this is what I thought I would see in like year two of his career, not the first year of his career, halfway through his rookie season. It's crazy how good he's gotten so quickly. It's unbelievable to see.
It's stupid.
it really is. Yeah.
Like, to take 2 years off and then just set the NBA ablaze and do it while like being the greatest social media force of all time. It's fantastic. Okay. Back to the Celtics, back to the draft. Celtics, assuming they do finish in the top four, somewhere in the top four. Let's say they finish four. Let's say worst case scenario, if the Nets finish with the worst record, they drop to four. How many guys are in that range that they might consider? Like, last year it was like they were at three and they probably had, what, five or six guys? Jaylen Brown, Buddy Hield, Jamal Murray, Marquise Chris, Dragan Bender, who they could have considered. If they're at four, how many guys are there?
So these are the guys that I like for the Celtics, and kind of the guys that I just like in general. So at that spot, like say the four spot, I don't think you're going to get Markel Fultz. He would be my top guy for the Celtics and for anybody else. I think realistically at that spot, you're probably not looking at Lonzo Ball either. I just have a feeling he's going to go top three. I just have a hunch that he will. And so I'm thinking it would be one of the forwards. You're hoping for Josh Jackson or Jason Tatum or Jonathan Isaac, or maybe you're looking ahead to possibly losing Kelly Olynyk in free agency and you're thinking, oh, Lauri Markkanen, a stretch forward from Arizona, could be a potential upgrade over Olynyk down the line anyway. Maybe those guys. Maybe you're looking at OG Anunoby from Indiana. He's always a possibility. I like him a lot. I'm not sure he's quite on the level of the other forwards, even though I want him to be. I'm not sure he's quite there yet. I don't know about
every draft freak, and I call you a freak lovingly, loves Anunoby.
Oh, he's fun. People compare him to Kawhi, and
that's disrespectful to Kawhi.
It is, and it's disrespectful to the Spurs in a way too, because that was such a unique situation. And I think it'd be unfair to put those expectations on OG or any other player, because it's just so unusual how quickly and the way Kawhi developed with the Spurs.
Yeah, okay, but I didn't mean to get you off track. I just had to go with Anunoby. Who else, like, of those guys, who do you prefer for the Celtics, and who would they possibly consider there?
So at the four spot?
Yeah, we'll say four. We'll say four now, and then we'll boost it up to two, because I know Fultz is your number one.
I think at this point right now, man, it's so hard. I kind of lean towards. I mean, it's probably Jonathan Isaac or Jason Tatum for me, for the Celtics, more so than Josh Jackson. But that's still so hard, because if Jackson just becomes a good shooter, he could be really great for a long time. But I think Isaac is more of a sure bet as a shooter, and so is Tatum, more so than Jackson. So I give them a slight edge.
Okay. Does it change anything for you that the Celtics suddenly have this electric offense? Like, before, I think when I have Sam Vecenie on this podcast like a month or two ago, it was like, yeah, the Celtics could really use another guy who can go get his shot. And now it's like, well, they can kind of score on anyone anyway. and obviously shooting is a huge skill. But to me, like, the equation, Isaiah Thomas might have changed the equation for the Celtics in a way. And At that high in the draft, you probably don't go for fit anyway. But to me, Isaiah he's shifted things a little bit for the Celtics franchise.
That's a good point too. In some ways, I wonder, you know, from a philosophical perspective when it comes to the draft, maybe it really doesn't matter at all if we're talking about fit or we're talking about like team need. Maybe that shouldn't even be a minute factor, because in some ways maybe you're drafting for the best potential player who could become your best trade asset. Because if you're the Celtics and you think Josh Jackson becomes a better player than Jonathan Isaac, even if Jonathan Isaac might be a better fit theoretically, and these are just two examples, I think maybe you still go with Josh Jackson, knowing that he might become a more valuable player for you in the future if you make a trade and it doesn't include him, or he becomes a more valuable trade asset. And I know like anybody from the team, like if they're talking to the media, they would say, you know, it's not about assets, they're players that we want. But that definitely has to be a factor for any team at all in the NBA, is just building assets and, again, putting yourself in a position to potentially trade for a superstar if the trade is available, even if it's not on draft night.
Yeah, especially we've seen it with Jaylen Brown. Like, yes, he probably was the best fit for their team. As you look back on it, like, at the draft, you thought, okay, the Celtics really need a shooter. Well, Buddy Hield would have had a tough time getting minutes over Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, and Isaiah Thomas. I think same thing would have gone for Jamal Murray. Brown has played minutes largely because he's a wing, and he has a lot to figure out still, but he has the body, he has the athleticism to play on the wing, and the Celtics really need those two traits. So sometimes fit is something that changes from year to year, and certainly not wise to to judge anything on, I think, when you're making decisions that high in the draft, unless it's like a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
And you have these two guys that they're so close as prospects that you're like, oh, you know what? We could use a big man, not a point guard. So let's go with that. Speaking of big men, my man Ante Zizic is over there in Europe, now on his second team, having a nice 19 and now 20-year-old season. I know you've watched Zizic a little bit. How has he changed the way you viewed him from as a prospect from last year when he was in the draft? And where would he go if he was in this year's draft?
I think with this year's draft, it's kind of lacking the bigs. It's not really. It has guys in the middle of the draft like Ivan Rabb and Robert Williams and Harry Giles, who's like, I don't know if it's right that he slipped, but he's like off the lottery for a lot of people. And in a sense, I think Zizic would be right there in that group with them. So we're talking like 13 to 17 or maybe 11 to 15, like that range for Zizic. So borderline lottery pick, I would think, just based on his development this year playing overseas. The dude's doing it at the highest of levels in Europe. And I think that speaks to his development at a super, super young age. And in some ways, I look at how dominant he's been as a rebounder, and it's like, oh, the Celtics could use a guy like that. It's too bad they didn't bring him over this season, because the Celtics don't have any answers on their roster for rebounding, but they do at that kind of extension of the roster with their draft and Satches and Zizic. He would obviously aid them in that department this season. And in a sense, assuming the Celtics do bring him over next season, I think maybe it minimizes the need a little bit to maybe spend heavy on a veteran player who may not have a long-term future with the team, knowing that Zizic does look ready. He looks ready to contribute as a high-energy rim runner who rebounds the hell out of the basketball.
He's fun, man. I haven't watched any of his full games, but looking at his highlights, the guy's just, I mean, he is a physical force. Like, he is a big, strong, burly man. And what really cracks me up about his new team, where he's coached by David Blatt, it's like Celtics reunion turkey. They got Semi Erden, they got Luke Herringody, they've got, like, all they need to do is sign Fab Melo, and it would be like Celtics draft greatest hits. It would be just fantastic. I need Fab Melo to find his way to Dara Safaka, or however the hell you say it. I need that. The other guy is Gershon Yabusele. He is putting up big numbers in China. I don't know how much you can judge off that, because those teams aren't nearly as good. And it's like the Zizic thing. He was killing the Adriatic League, and it's like, yeah, but he's supposed to kill the Adriatic League. It wasn't until, I think, he went to the EuroLeague and still is putting up numbers that you started to think, okay, this dude, he is really producing at a top level. You did discuss the Celtics rebounding in your latest piece on The Ringer. I thought it was pretty funny, your Band-Aid solution. Just box out. Just box out, guys. Just turn around and block out. Oh, man, the Celtics rebounding has been bad.
It's really, really, really bad, Jay. Like, that's going to be a problem for them in the playoffs, right? I think that could be what kind of spells their demise in the playoffs, regardless if it's the first round, second round, or the conference finals. I think their inability to rebound the basketball, it is something that they need to fix if they really want to make a strong run this year. I don't know where the solutions are. I don't know if that's Andrew Bogut with the Mavericks. I don't know if the Sixers would trade Noel. I don't even think they would at this point. I think the way they're surging, I think if I'm the Sixers, I want to keep that core intact. And the Mavericks, for that matter, because the West is so crazy. Like, the Mavericks are like two games out from the worst record in the West, but they're also like two games out from the eight seed. So yeah, it's weird.
Crazy over there in the West. It's a weird world over there.
So, like, what are the options for the Celtics? That's really the big question for me. And that's why it's like, well, if there are no options on the trade market, maybe the solution is simply, like, the whole team, everybody on the team just needs to make a commitment to boxing out and finishing off possessions, because that's kind of the thing that gets overlooked sometimes about defense. Is we talk about man-to-man defense, we talk about rim protection, we talk about, you know, hedging on the pick and roll, we talk about all these little things, but rebounding is what puts the period at the end of the possession, of the end of the sentence, to end that possession. And they have the 30th defensive rebounding percentage in basketball this year. They don't have any really good rebounders on the team besides Avery Bradley for his position. So it's just, I don't know what they do, Jay. What do you think?
I mean, at this point, they are not going to become a good rebounding team. If they traded for Bogut, maybe, but the thing is, like, he would be a short-term rental. A, how much better does he make your team? I think he would make them significantly better in the sense that rebounding is by far their biggest issue. It has dragged down their defense all year. They are getting shredded by teams that aren't even, like, the Knicks were playing Justin Holiday, 6'6" shooting guard at power forward sometimes, and still getting rebound after rebound against the Celtics. It's abominable at times. So, yes, Bogut would help someone like Bogut, but how much? You're probably still in the 2-3 range. You're probably still not going to knock off Cleveland. Almost definitely still not going to knock off Cleveland. And why waste assets for a guy who's just going to be here for the rest of the season when you've got Zizic, you've got Yabusele waiting, you've got money to spend in free agency, and you're not going to take on any long-term money because you want to have the money to chase the top free agents like Gordon Hayward, Blake Griffin, whoever else might be on their radar. So to me, I think I wouldn't be surprised if they just stand pat and get bruised on the glass every game and hope it doesn't matter too much. Hope it doesn't matter until you face, you know, Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals, and then Tristan Thompson grabs like 30 offensive rebounds a game and he ends in like six games in what is otherwise a competitive series. So I don't know. I don't know if they should make a move. Obviously, they need to at some point, but I just don't know if it makes sense to do it this year.
I think so, yeah, I'm with you.
Just box out.
I'm with you, Jay. Plus, Bogut's hurt. Bogut's been like had nagging injuries all season long. Will he be healthy in April and May?
Yeah. Yeah. And Amir Johnson, I don't think he's fully healthy. He's not rebounding like he used to, and that's hurt. Al Horford never been a great rebounder. They just don't have any physicality. Like, there is not a single big man on their roster. And Jordan Mickey came in against New York, gave good minutes, and then got beasted by Hernan Gomez for a rebound that reminded you, like, one of the things limiting Mickey's potential is that for all the shot blocking and deflections he gets, he's not a good rebounder either. So it's a mess in their rebounding. It really is bad, man.
It says a lot that Avery Bradley is the team's best rebounder. I think that says it all.
That's preposterous, man. I think you need to get out there. You need to show him to box out. I've said this before. I think they need to get Tom Izzo into a practice, like throw on the football pads, just learn that physicality. They might. I don't know, man. It's going to be an issue all year, and it's going to drag down their defense, and hopefully their offense is good enough. Anyway, I don't want to keep you on. Actually, one more question. I do want to keep you on for one more question.
I'm down, Jay.
You talked briefly about Harry Giles, and I want to talk about Harry Giles because when I had Sam on, I didn't ask him about Harry Giles, and I kicked myself because he was considered number one prospect before the latest knee issue. I haven't seen too much of him because he's only played a few minutes for Duke this season. I'm a big Duke guy for everyone out there. I know. Come at me. But how much has he lost in the short time you've seen him at Duke? And, like, how good was he when he was healthy? Because I see him and I'm like, this dude's kind of a step slow. I don't see it. So how much better was he before the injuries?
I think with Giles, at the lower levels he was playing at before, after his first torn ACL, when he was fully recovered from that, I think a lot of people have said, oh, you know, he's lost verticality. He was never like the most, he wasn't a Blake Griffin leaper before, right? I think in the ways that Giles was explosive was laterally, like just his ability to step out and defend quick guards. You're seeing him get blown by this year at Duke, and that's concerning. The question is this because he has rust and he's still recovering and getting back to the guy he was? Or is this the new version of Harry Giles, and this is the guy that we're actually going to be looking at projecting ahead for in the NBA? And if it is, that's a major, major concern, because a big part of his potential, in my opinion, was just his overall defensive versatility. He could defend, I mean, I know it's a cliche, but he could defend all five positions on the floor, and he could really rebound the ball too. So he wasn't really like a liability like some of those versatile players are. And that's unique, because on the offensive end, his ability to handle the ball, make good decisions, finish inside, playing the pick and roll. About his only notable weakness was the lack of a jumper. But like with Josh Jackson, he did a lot of other things well, where you're still looking at him as a top five guy. Like, it wouldn't be a concern. He's still a good player. It's just a matter of how good he would become based on the jumper. So now you're looking at him as a guy who's not the same level defender that he was before, and he doesn't have the jumper on the offensive end. And I have a hard time figuring out where in the draft I would want to take him, because if you're a team and you have the eighth pick, sure, Giles might theoretically have more potential than let's just say, I don't know, Miles Bridges, right? But if you view Miles Bridges as more of a sure bet to A, stay healthy, and B, carve out a long career, then I think you kind of have to lean towards that guy, even if Giles has more potential. I just have a really hard time figuring out Giles, Jay. It's tough. It's really tough with him.
Assuming he doesn't like explode in the second half of the season, are you out on him as a lottery prospect? Probably.
I don't want to say I'm out, but I kind of, in the last Ringer big board we did, I kind of posed that question. It's something along the lines of like, even if Giles just explodes to finish the season, does the risk of injury, because he's had the 2 years ago, he tore his ACL, MCL, and meniscus in his right knee. And then last year, he tore it in his left knee, I believe. Or either, it was might have been the other way around, where it was the left knee first, and then it was the right knee. But the thing is, it's like, that's concerning for a guy who, I'm pretty sure it's also been reported, had injury history going back to middle school, too. So if this guy has had all these injuries over the course of his career, two ACL tears and the knee arthroscopy last year, I don't know, like, where do you feel comfortable drafting a guy that's had so many injury issues? Is he that much better of a prospect that you feel comfortable risking it with the injuries? I don't know if I feel comfortable until around maybe the 14th to the 18th pick, that range. I think I'd be very, very comfortable taking him there. But in the lotto, this is a strong draft, man. Like, there's a lot of good players, like 11, 12 guys that I really, really like. And I don't know if I'd want to take the risk with Giles unless I felt really, really good about his future medical.
Yeah. That poor kid, if he just stayed healthy.
Yeah.
But hopefully he'll get healthy. Hopefully he'll bounce back. Somebody who does not need to bounce back is Kevin O'Connor, because he's at the top already. Everybody go follow Kevin at Kevin O'Connor NBA. Read his stuff on The Ringer, like I'm sure you already do. Thank you very much, Kevin, for coming on. We really appreciate your insight. You are the best, my man. You're the top draft guy to me. I need that draft guy. I'm itching for that draft guy already. I want to dig into it. All the Celtics fans, I know they're excited too, because the Nets are so damn bad. I almost said the F word there. We were gonna have to bleep that one out.
It would have been okay if you dropped it there. It would have been appropriate, Jay.
Very true. Thanks for coming on, my man.
Thank you for having me, Jay.
All right, take care. All right, so that was the interview with draft god Kevin O'Connor. It's important to remember when the Celtics lay an egg against the New York Knicks and Derrick Rose rips them from the inside out, and Justin Holiday and Willie Hernan Gomez look like superstars against them, that they have a top lottery pick coming in a stacked draft, as well as Ante Zizic, who could be a rebounding beast and is only 20 years old, and Gershon Yabusele. I still hope I say his name right every time. I probably get it wrong. Who's in China putting up big numbers, working on his overall game, going coast to coast and slamming it home like Karl Malone. So it's an exciting time for Celtics fans. Everybody knows that. But sometimes it's nice to take a step back. Think about all the players who might become Celtics. The Brooklyn Nets are woeful, just a woeful group. And the Celtics, you know, not only do they have, are they on a 50-win pace, but they've got another potential all-star coming their way in the draft. Who knows? Who knows what that pick will become? Maybe they'll trade it. Maybe they'll keep it. Who knows? But one thing we do know is that the Celtics have the greatest daily podcast on planet Earth. That is the Locked On Celtics podcast. Please subscribe to us. Just search for Locked On Celtics wherever you listen to podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating, please. And if you want to advertise with us, podcasting is an awesome, awesome form of advertisement because we connect with the listeners. You guys listen to us every day. We're like your friends. So if you want to look into advertising with us, if you're a local business, Boston business, whatever else, you might be a national business, who knows, email us at lockedonceltics@gmail.com. we'll get back to you with rates and all that stuff. So yeah, other than that, listen to us every day. We'll be here Monday through Friday giving you the goods on the Celtics. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate all your support. Hashtag Rain and Jays. Send all your comments, questions there. We'll get back to you when we can. We'll put some of them on the air. And, yeah, we'll talk to you again Monday, I guess, after Evan Turner's return. Can't wait for that. Shout out to Evan Turner, the interview god. We just talked to the draft god, soon to be the interview god. And we'll talk to you guys later. That's it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, J. King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics.